listening to Emotions, Winning the Battle of Brands. Uncovering why emotional insights are critical for company and brand growth, and helping change the way you think about how your customers think. Emotions is brought to you by Brand Trust. And now, here are your hosts.
Hello, and welcome to our brand new radio series, Emotions, Winning the Battle of Brands, brought to you by Brand Trust. I'm your host, Brent Smith, joined by my pal and colleague, Todd Youngblood. We're also joined today by Daryl Travis, who's the CEO of Brand Trust and author of the brand new book, How Does It Make You Feel? Why Emotion Wins the Battle of Brands. Gentlemen, how are you doing today?
I'm doing great, Brent. And I think we're going to get into brand reality number one today. Feelings and facts?
Feelings, not facts. And I'm excited. So, Daryl, how are you?
I'm terrific. Looking forward to our conversation today.
Well, Daryl, to get us going, provide our audience with an overview of what we mean by feelings, not facts.
Yeah, we have worked so many years for many of the top brands in the world, and we've discovered that it really comes down to a half a dozen or so realities or imperatives that the better, more successful brands tend to understand or tend to adhere to. And one of them is very powerful, and it's just that simple reality that brands are about feelings, not facts, and that's really because people make buying decisions based on what they are buying, how it makes them feel, and what they're going to get from it in terms of, is it going to make them feel more confident, more secure, cool, pretty, smart, savvy, happy? Is it going to somehow boost their identity? Does it represent their values? Would their friends approve? And that's certainly a big factor in social marketing. And then what really do their choices, brands, say about them as people? So it's really about feelings more than it is about facts.
Daryl, I want to push back a little bit on that. And from a personal experience, very early in my career, I was selling mainframe computer systems. So I'm dating myself, back in the day when mainframes were still cool. And these were decisions that I was asking folks to make that were $9, $10, $12 million. So, I mean, a lot of cash involved, a lot of business risk involved. And I mean, it's hard to say that I'm going to make that kind of decision based on how I feel about it without having an awful lot of focus on the facts underlying it as well. What's the balance between those two?
Well, that's a great question. And of course, you've always heard you'll never get fired for buying IBM, right?
So that's right.
There's emotion involved in every decision. In fact, every human decision has an underpinning of emotion in it. So there's always reason and feeling involved in our buying decisions and in the decisions we make. But the emotional underpinning of the decision is generally stronger than the rational part of it. So let's talk about, for example, price, right? Which would be something that you would think would be the most rational of decisions. And certainly on a big mega mainframe or something that you're going to spend millions of dollars on, you're going to go through all the details. You're going to understand every aspect of the technical specs. You're going to really be thorough in terms of pricing and understanding the details of the contract. Yes, you're going to go through all of those kinds of things. And you think, well, ultimately, we're going to buy on price. Where do we get the best deal? But that's not the case. The case really is true that when you're making a hard-hearted, cold-blooded decision like price, what you're really doing is you're making yourself feel more confident, more capable, more in charge, more savvy, that you went through the data, through the information. So even when it looks like you're buying on reason, you're buying for that feeling that you're getting for actually applying reason and going through the process. So it's always about that. It's not really about that really sort of practical sense of price or a rational decision.
Daryl, how do marketers, you know, work with their sales team to get the sales team to not focus so much on the rational points and to learn how to sell on that emotion?
Yeah, it's really a terrific question because we've actually done a fair amount of emotional studies with salespeople. And one of the things that we've discovered, which I don't think you necessarily need some terrific scientific rigor and discipline to understand this. Most people get this intuitively. The best salespeople are the salespeople who actually have more emotional intelligence. They actually can identify better with the customer and almost have a sixth sense for really what the customer is looking for, what the customer needs at that deeper emotional level.
All right, we'll be right back after this short commercial break.
How Does It Make You Feel? Why Emotion Wins the Battle of Brands is a new book by Daryl Travis, CEO of Brand Trust. It reveals how to break through a saturated marketplace to build a brand for the ages. With stories that illuminate the secrets of human motivation, How Does It Make You Feel shows marketers, researchers, and insight professionals how to create powerful emotional connections with customers in a crowded social marketing era. How Does It Make You Feel? Why Emotion Wins the Battle of Brands is available today on Amazon.
All right, and we're back with Daryl Travis, CEO of Brand Trust.
Daryl, one of the things that always strikes me as I walk through almost any store I go into, the phrase new and improved always seems to just leap out at me. Everything's always new and improved. Is that really necessary? Is that something, I mean, I almost find it annoying, frankly. Is that something that folks are doing that's smart or not so smart?
Well, I think the, you know, a consultant's favorite response is it depends. So in some cases, I think it might be smart, but in many cases, it's not, because it ends up being sort of a shallow way of trying to get a customer's attention. And in many cases, it's not the kind of thing that pays much respect to the customer's intelligence. So I think the real answer is, what is, if you have a deeper sense of the understanding about exactly why they're being motivated to make that decision, and you can bring your product or your messaging into alignment with that, bring it alongside that. So, for example, we talked before about the role that price plays, and price is certainly important in a purchasing, any kind of a purchase decision. But if you can understand that deeper emotion underneath of that price that's motivating it, and then you can speak to that with a better value proposition, then that's when you can keep your margins from eroding, and that's when you can, you know, hopefully avoid having to resort to those kinds of new and improved things that the consumer looks at and says, oh, sure.
How about for marketers? I guess traditionally marketers a lot of times have, you know, you have your target group. So maybe you're 10 to 20s, or your teens, or your single parents. How are they able to target by groups of emotions and feelings? Is that possible?
You can, but I think that there's a tendency to get a little carried away with that. And segmentation is one of the things that we run into a lot in our work, where we're trying to almost bring too much mechanical thought to the process and not giving enough credit to the emotional homogeneity of the consumer. So, for example, you know, we love to segment people into various groups, you know, we like to call, and then we like to make a name for that group. And so we kind of artificially put them in those groups. And like, for example, one of my favorites is we like to refer to elderly women as postmenopausal empty nesters. But here's the thing. Have you ever heard a woman refer to her that way? No, because she doesn't think of herself that way. And so the brand completely misses the boat when the brand tries to align itself with that sort of thinking. And one of my other favorite ones are DINKs, double income, no kids. You know, those are the kinds of segmentation studies that we look at that make the whole aspect of the consumer just seem like it's completely off base and makes no sense at all.
I have to say, if somebody labeled me a DINK, I would be kind of offended. just by the title alone.
Surely.
Yeah. Daryl, your points make a lot of sense. And I guess a two-part question. There is some value in segmentation. I mean, because there are products that you know, somebody's going to buy based on their age or demographic group or whatever. So I see some value in it. And the second part of the question is, I see the word persona a lot. Is that just a euphemism or a different word for the same thing?
In some ways it is. Personas tend to be a little more helpful, though, because personas are more about the story of the customer and the story of the customer's life. And so it helps to bring, I think, for marketers and folks on marketing teams, it really helps to bring the customer to life for everybody, and to help them think about things in the way the customer thinks about things on a sort of day-to-day basis as they're making decisions and formulating plans and strategies, and that sort of thing. I think personas are more helpful in that way.
Well, gentlemen, I hate to say it, but we're out of time. If you found today's conversation about emotional branding interesting and would like to learn more, Daryl's new book, How Does It Make You Feel? Why Emotion Wins the Battle of Brands, is available at Amazon.com. On behalf of our sponsor, Brand Trust, and Daryl Travis, Todd Youngblood, and myself, we thank you for listening. We'll see you next week.